Okay, well, I hope to do this seminar again. So it's the first time I'm doing it. So it's a bit of an experimentation for me, how it goes. So yeah, let's
What time?
Yeah, a little bit. What time should we stop for the sharp lunch? It's good for you.
What time would you like for dinner?
Is there any particular... What's your name again?
Suvarnara.
Suvarnara. Do you have any particular good time? So, say 1:30 to 2:30?
1:30. But then when will we see our country?
1:30. Well, we can stop for...
I think we still have time to come back.
Don't see Sunday? We can stop for a break.
Yes.
We can stop for a little break at 12 then.
Until 1:30 we have time. This is your cheap plan.
Do you want to do 12:30 until 1:30 then?
Okay, we'll do 12:30 to 1:30. Let's do 12:30 to 1:30, yeah? Thank you everyone for coming. So let's see how we go with the noise outside. If I remember rightly, it wasn't so bad last year. One of the reasons being is just the place next door. It was a major focal point for the gay community.
Yes, and it isn't anymore.
But now it's changed management, so there's probably not going to be a disco or a rave outside.
Oh really? That's
good.
Not on the green anymore.
Huh?
On the green
anymore. That's like only about 3 o'clock from my experience. Okay. We'll see. But anyway, we will go forward anyway. Okay, so I've been teaching Nectar Devotion for Bhakta Sastri for a few years now, I think 3 or 4 years. And we do up to chapters 19. Mm-hmm. Or Bhakta Sastri. Have you done Bhakta Sastri?
No, I haven't.
You've done Bhakta Sastri?
I'm currently.
You're currently. So we will do that in September, I think. So that's up from chapters 1 to 19 is Bhakta Sastri. So when we get to chapter 19, we always get the same similar response from devotees. They want to continue.
Ah, okay.
They want to continue because, you know, because they're liking this stuff, they want to continue, but... So we always promise, you know, they always ask, please can you do some more chapters, you know, we want to continue with Nectar of Devotion, you know. So, based on that, I was also personally intrigued, because from chapters 1 to 19 I had PowerPoint presentations, so I was intrigued to study in the same way then, the chapters 19 onwards. Yeah, so my method of study, my personal study, the way I study is I like to study as if I'm teaching. So what I study, I put into a PowerPoint. So that's what I did for the whole of the Nectar of Devotion, chapters 19 onwards. I spent a few months, whatever time I had, using Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami's, you know, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which Nectar of Devotion is a summary of that, and also Dhanadas Swami done a wonderful study of the Bhakta Rasamrita Sindhu and Nectar of Devotion called Waves of Devotion, which we can makes it much easier to penetrate into the kind of technical aspects of the Nectar of Devotion. So that's why we're here today. That's why I'm here giving this presentation. So I'm presenting my own personal study. Yeah? And based on devotees' enthusiasm to hear about chapters 19 onwards, you know. This picture is Srila Prabhupada speaking on Nectar of Devotion. Yeah? In Vrindavan. He gave a series of lectures in Vrindavan. And you can find that online. It's about 12 perhaps 15 classes Prabhupada gives on the nectar of devotion. Yes, and this is a picture from that, those classes. Interestingly, right beside Rupa Goswami's samadhi. You know? And Prabhupada himself, he finished the summary of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu called The Nectar of Devotion in 1969 in Vrindavan. He finished that. You know? So, Nectar of Devotion has 51 chapters. Okay? And Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu means the ocean of devotion, the ocean of rasa, alright? So Rupa Goswami divides his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu into four oceans. The eastern ocean, the southern ocean, the western ocean, and the northern ocean. Alright? It's very poetic, very beautiful how he's done that, you know? Now, chapters 1 to 19, backtracking. Each ocean is divided into waves. Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
We have another participant as well. It's a bit crowded here, so let's see. So, each of the four oceans, the Eastern Ocean, Southern Ocean, Western Ocean, and Northern Ocean, is subdivided into waves. Yeah? So, for example, the Eastern Ocean, which is what we study in the Nectar, in the Bhakta Sastri, the Eastern Ocean is...
we're studying the Bhakta Sastris?
The Eastern Ocean, chapters 1 to 19. Yeah, that's the Eastern Ocean. So, for instance, that Eastern Ocean, the first wave gives an overview of devotional service. The second wave describes Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, part one, and then part two is Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti. That's part two. That's the practice of spontaneous devotion. And it's touched briefly. Yeah? The third wave is about Bhava Bhakti, and the fourth wave is Prema Bhakti. And that's what we study for Bhakta Sastra. Yeah? So that's the Eastern Ocean. Have you done Bhakta Sastra, Purumayi? Yes, so you're familiar with that, isn't it? Yeah, we did it last year, no? Or the year before we did? You do every year.
3 years ago, I did it.
3 years ago, alright, so.
We did it twice, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So, we're gonna dive into the Southern Ocean. We're gonna swim around a little bit in the Southern Ocean.
It's warm in the Southern Ocean.
Yes. Now, some of the points, especially might be a bit technical in the beginning, but I try my best to make it as understandable for myself and yourselves as possible, you know. But don't worry too much about grasping the technical names. Yeah? The main point of presenting this little seminar is a chance for us to hear and chant and remember directly about Krishna and his personality. That's what the Southern Ocean deals with. Krishna, his qualities, for example, we're discussing here. Yeah? It's good to discuss directly about Krishna because as devotees of Krishna, we should be able to, for instance, speak about Krishna's personality. You know? Okay, he's a supreme personality of Godhead, but also he has many wonderful qualities. Yeah? So we hear about, of course, we hear the philosophy, you know, which we have to hear, which we hear some bandhagan, you know, about the soul and the material world. You know. But it's good for us to also hear directly about Krishna, his name, his form, his qualities, and his pastimes. According to our qualification, we may not be able to fully relish those, but at least we should hear them. So as we progress in Krishna consciousness, we can then, as we become purified, we can take pleasure in relishing Krishna's name, form, qualities and pastimes, you know. So that's the my kind of inspiration and the purpose for presenting this, is to give us a little, perhaps a little inspiration into how wonderful Krishna is and his actual personality. So this is Sankirtan. I mean, Sankirtan means to remember Krishna's pastimes, to remember his qualities. So the southern ocean, the first wave, remember each ocean is divided into waves, okay? So the first wave is called Vibhava. I'll explain what that means later, alright? So chapter 20 is called Transcendental Mellow. I'll expand on these points. 21 is the qualities of Krishna. Rupa Goswami gives 64 qualities of Krishna. More qualities of Krishna. Chapter 22. See this one. Who's read the complete Nectar of Devotion? No? No? So this will be good. You can, Krishna's personality. Further traits of Krishna. And the devotees of Krishna. Now we're doing 2 days, or we're doing this week and next week. So I'm not particularly rushing to cover everything there. We may get through everything, and then we'll go on to the next wave in the Southern Ocean. Yeah? But let's just see how we go. And we might well get through quicker because there's not so many devotees here. There's only 3 of you. So in that sense, we might get through quicker. But let's just see how it goes. But only one more as well. Stimulation for ecstatic love. Did that help? You understand what we're doing? Yeah. Southern Ocean. We're looking at the Southern Ocean. So, here comes some technical terms. Now, it's not the whole day is not going to be filled with technical terms, but just in the beginning. Yeah. So, Vibhava. This is. Now there's 5 general topics that this Southern Ocean deals with. And the first one is Vibhava. Special symptoms or causes of ecstasy. I'll expand upon it more. I'm giving you titles at the moment. Yeah. Number 2. Anubhava. You know Anubhava Prabhu? It's not about him. His name is Anubhava. Subsequent ecstasy.
And Anu means I, the individual jiva.
Yeah.
Like there's
Vibhu
and Anu.
Is it? Yeah, okay. I did know that. Perhaps. We'll see if that context meaning matches. And then Sattvakabhava. Constitutional or existential ecstasy. Vyapichari Bhava, aggressive ecstasy. Hopefully, after these 2 days, these will make a little bit more sense to you, what they mean. And Sthayi Bhava. This is the one more common term you may hear spoken in class sometime. Do you know what Sthayi Bhava means? Sthayi Bhava is one's permanent mood of ecstasy in relationship to Krishna. Like Madhva Yasoda's Sthayi Bhava is Vatsalya, rasa.
Hastahi Bhav. Hastahi Bhav of Radharani is Panduku. Hastahi Bhav. And that bhava always remains the same. But it's spiked with these different symptoms, the cause raising of emotion and feelings for Krishna. Okay? What explains all this? With that, so stay bhava.
It's easy to remember because it's in the word stay.
Yeah, stay. That's the way Vaidya works. That's why I was doing the or continuous ecstasy. Okay? Now, we're now going to speak about Vibhava. Yeah? Open that up a bit. So, Vibhava. So that's what stimulates one's affection for Krishna. Is Vibhava. It's something which stimulates to the point of it becoming really intense. So, So, Srila Prabhupada, he summarizes the definition. The cause of relishing transcendental mellow. Exactly what we mean by Vibhava. Now, I'll give some examples. Now, Vibhava has two subdivisions. Don't worry, it's not all going to be like this. Vibhava again is that which stimulates one's eternal affection. It stimulates one's eternal affection. So that's divided into two. So Alambana is basic, Krishna and Krishna's devotees. And it's Udipana. That Krishna's that impelling, Udipana. You heard of this one, Udipana. Krishna's flute, his footprints, his prasadam, etc. So Vibhava, the cause is that causes the affection to Krishna to rise in the heart. So the cowherd boys may hear Krishna blowing his bugle, or they may see his footprints, or they may taste his mahaprasad, and that will cause a Vibhava, it will cause a great love for Krishna. There's a story of Uddhava, I think, when he looked at the dark rain cloud, it caused a Vibhava. Then he remembered Krishna. Or somebody wrote, they see a peacock feather. That's Udipan, means it impels, it makes them think of Krishna. Yeah? So Vibhava.
I understand Udi to mean up. Like we say in yoga, Uddiyana Bandha, yeah, means the breath that goes up, yeah, from the base to the throat.
Yeah. Up the... So, it's two. So Vibhava has two subdivisions. Now, Alambana. Okay. Subject. So this has two divisions as well. Follow? So Vibhava, Alambana. So Vishayi means Krishna, who's the object of the devotee's love. Yeah? And what's the other word? Ashraya. You heard of these two words? Vishaya and Ashraya. So Krishna is the object of affection. Where the affection resides is in his devotees. That's Ashraya. They are the abode of love for the object Krishna. Alright? Devotees are the ashraya, they're the shelter of love for Krishna. Yeah? Vishaya and ashraya. So the word Vishaya literally means the object is there. The ashraya means the shelter where love of Godhead resides in the devotees. Yeah? Sometimes it's translated as reservoir. Yeah. You follow so far? So in other words, Ashraya is the lover, Vishaya is the beloved.
Okay?
Ashraya is the lover, Ashraya is the beloved. Okay. Should we go through that again? You okay? You got it?
Yeah.
Good. Okay. So, Vishaya. So, Krishna as a stimulus for ecstatic love. Okay? Vishaya. That's Krishna. So Krishna has different ages. So he's another Yauvanam. But at different ages, as he progresses in the form of Vrindavan up to the age of Navayauvana. So these different ages will stimulate in different devotees in love in different ways. Yeah? So Rupa Goswami, he mentions Anya Rupa. Krishna sometimes takes an entirely different form to stimulate the devotee's love for him. An example given is in Brahma Vimohan Leela, where Krishna took the forms of so many cows and cowherd boys. That stimulated Balaram's ecstatic love for Krishna. You know, the pastor, he could understand something was very peculiar about this situation. The residents of Vrindavan, they showed so much affection for their children and the cows to their calves. That affection he's only seen in between the residents and Krishna. Yeah? So he became a bit curious. And then he understood, this is Krishna. Krishna had expanded, and that caused a great pulse. Balaram already has great affection for Krishna, but that just stirred his love for Krishna even more. He became more love for him. You know?
You could say when a parent dresses up like Father Christmas for the children, yeah. And then they discover that it's actually their father, and they go, oh, why are you doing that? But actually it's stimulating their happiness.
Yeah, you could say it churns.
In a mundane example.
Yeah. It churns it. It kind of churns it, you know? Yeah. Right? That was chapter 20. Right? So let's just, for my own sake as well. Okay, let's just go through quickly again, yeah? Quickly again. So chapter Transcendental Meadow. The points I'm presenting is really based on Danadas Swami. He's really broken it down and puts it in a systematic way, you know. So it's no credit for myself, my own study. I've more or less copied and pasted Danadas Swami's explanation. So, we'll be studying the five general topics. Now I forgot to mention that point. These five topics will be spoken of in relation to all the different types of devotees. What's the vibhava symptoms of the cowherd boys? What's the vibhava symptoms of the cowherd girls? What's the vibhava symptoms of Mother Yasoda, etc. Yeah? What are the special symptoms that causes Mother Yasoda's loving Krishna? What is the special symptoms that causes the gopis to love Krishna? So again, we did vibhava, anubhava, sattvika bhava, kriyapachari bhava, and stayi bhava. Okay, so just concentrating on vibhava is divided into two. That Krishna and Krishna's devotees give rise to love. And then, udipan, things that remind the devotees of Krishna. Yeah. And then, going to alambana, speaks now directly about these two things. This is brought up, Vishayi is the object, Krishna as the object of love. Ashraya, the shelter of love, is the devotees. Yeah, Ashraya is the lover, and Krishaya is the beloved. Now, just going as an example of, let's go back here. Okay, we're looking at Vibhava now. Okay, did that. Now, the next chapter, that was chapter 20. Chapter 21 will deal with this, Krishna and Krishna's devotees. Yeah? So, Visha Lambana, we okay, go for that. And again, an example is Krishna himself. Yeah? So now, so at the end of chapter 20 described where Krishna takes an entirely different form, the cows and the cowherd boys, yeah, and stimulated Lord Brahma's love, or Lord Palaram's affection, excuse me. So that's the first way in which Krishna stimulates ecstatic love. So chapter 21 describes the second way he does so. In other words, Krishna's own form. You follow? Mm-hmm. Krishna's own form. So, avrita rupa, covered or disguised. Sometimes, and we'll do it, we'll read, Sometimes Krishna disguises himself as a boatman, isn't it? Yeah. And we'll read one story from, a little story from Venu Gita in a minute about that. Yeah. So Swarupa has two divisions. One is covered or disguised and fully manifest. Yeah. Anyarupa is completely different expansion of Krishna. He expands himself.
So Krishna as Mohini, for example.
Yeah, that's Anyarupa. No, that's Anyarupa.
Okay.
This is Krishna himself.
Okay.
Who's dressed up.
Okay, yeah.
You know? And because the internal energy, the yogamaya potency, even though you have so much love for Krishna, sometimes the cowherd girls, and they don't recognize Krishna at first. Krishna's in such a disguise, you know?
But it's not the same as when he covers his parents with yogamaya, for example.
No.
It's no. Different when he's actually dressed like in a costume.
Yeah, yeah, that's it, yeah. So in avrita rupa, Krishna covers himself in it. So just remember, all this causes the affection of the devotees to. In other words, love of God is not just a static thing. There's all these different pastimes that bring out all these different aspects of love. So Prabhupada says, when Krishna is covered by a different kind of dress, his personal feature is called covered or disguised, you know? So, I'm going to read a little pastime in that glasses soon. Do you want to hear what pastime we've got?
Yes.
You sure?
Definitely. Tell us the story, please.
Sorry. So, I'm going to do... I'm going to try this thing here. You know? It's a Rangini book. It's a Rangini thing. Sachin Underwar has this, and I'm going to just... See, I'm doing an experiment at the moment, see how it goes.
There's can I close the window for a minute? Or
yes.
Room?
Yes. Okay, try and best as you can to okay, try if you want, you could try it's only, it's a pastime, it's only 2 pages. So if you want, you can try and aid your meditation or this pastime, you can close your eyes if you want. And I'll try and read clearly, as nicely as possible. With a great desire to relish the transcendental mellows of Govinda's remembrance, Radharani stopped at Rajghat. I'll do a precursor. So this chapter is speaking about the Yamuna River. Okay, so hearing of the gopis enchanting pastimes with Sri Krishna, Yamuna Devi overflooded with bhava. When they departed to their villages, Yamuna Devi felt great separation from the gopis and surged up her banks, flooding the low-lying fields. Upon Yogamaya's indication, she returned to her shores and began to flow once again. Her charming dark waters, all the more mysterious in the reddish glow of the setting sun. With a great desire to relish the transcendental mellows of Govinda's remembrance, she stopped once again at Rajghat, recalling how Bihari Lal, disguised as a boatman, brought an aged vessel to this place to gain the audience of his beloved gopis. Once, Radhika and her sakis took their ghee and yogurt to the market in Mathura. Just the thought of a princess walking many miles to sell a pot of yogurt must be highly suspicious to anyone not under the sway of Sri Krishna's internal potency. But then, what creature has such freedom when Govinda himself is completely captivated by her? As they approached the Yamuna, the gopis were delighted to see a boat conveniently waiting to take them to the other side. Pulling her cloud blue veil over her beautiful face, King Vrishabhanu's daughter sent a young maidservant to arrange the fare with the boatman. Although difficult to appease, the boatman, who possessed a very attractive blue complexion and invoked many feelings of happiness among the gopigan, finally agreed on the fair price to carry them to the other shore. However, when all the gopis were properly seated, he made it known that his boat would not accede to the journey without first being purified by the water from a Rajvasi's feet. The gopis were first incredulous that a boat could communicate. Then they were outraged at his unreasonable demands. And finally, they were discouraged at the indifference of the boatman. When they inquired whose feet he wished to bathe, the boatman consulted his boat and informed them that Srimati Radharani's feet were their common choice. Exhibiting her reluctance, Radhika manifested her loving pique at this unusual fare. Hari replied that his boat was equally adamant, and with her attitude, it was highly unlikely the cargo would see the Yamuna's far shore. After much cajoling by sakis and boatmen alike, Radhika succumbed to their desire, and a cleverly disguised Hari happily bathed her lotus feet, keeping the Charanamrita in his lota. He sprinkled the Charanamrita on his head, and on the boat, and on the gopis, and finally on the river Yamuna. At the conclusion of his puja, having declared the crossing now sanctified, When an auspicious moment had arrived, the boat set off. Gracefully traversing Yamuna, that wonderful speaking boat, with its wonderful cargo of lotus-like gopis, steered by a wonderful boatman, reached midway across the river where the current was the strongest. Exhausted by labor due to excessive cargo weight, the boatman announced his weakness, occasioned by hunger, and his subsequent inability to exert himself any further. Despite entreaties, prayers, and threats, he refused to labor any more without eating a portion of the milk products in the gopis' possession. And so at first they refused, as the gopis watched the Vrindavan landscape quickly moving. It became apparent that quite soon they would all be out to sea. As they offered their pots of ghee, yogurt and cream to the boatman, he consumed them one after the other, throwing the empty containers overboard. The gopis' surprise crossed into the realms of disbelief when, after heartily belching, the boatman reclined in the bow of the boat, bloated and unable to move, rubbing his stomach in satisfaction. He lay down immediately and immediately fell asleep. While attempting to keep order among the alarmed gopis, Radharani instructed a sakhi to investigate what was amiss with the reluctant boatman. Examining him closely in his inebriated stupor, that gopi began to shriek in happiness and excitedly produced Sri Krishna's flute from under his boatman's clothing and revealed his true identity. Pondering the many wonderful pastimes that took place on her shores and in her waters, Yamuna Devi smiled in happiness through her resplendent lotuses and waited eagerly for nightfall when Sri Krishna and the gopis would arrive at Govindagarh to dance the Maharas and celebrate their nocturnal festival of bliss. Very sweet, no? Very nice. Krishna. I like when Krishna does a big belch.
That's like, there's a really beautiful picture, I can't remember where it is, I've seen it somewhere, of Krishna and his gorgeous longbow.
Yeah, I
and
picture
he's
that.
Lying there like that, and Radharani's lying on him.
I should get that picture up.
I imagine that picture.
I should put that picture up actually next time.
Nice.
So just take a note of that. So that's an example of Krishna in disguise. Yeah. And there's many pastimes. Many pastimes where Krishna disguises himself.
So he's actually the boatman in that.
So this is known as Prakat Rupa, so Krishna as he is. But then we have Prakat Rupa. That's where Krishna is is undisguised. Yeah, and it stimulates the devotee's affection. Yeah. So one devotee. Is this okay to play this?
Yeah,
yeah, it's lovely.
Each time I quote, you can. So one devotee praised the bodily features of Krishna when he saw the Lord in his personal manifest feature. So that's Prakat Rupa. So now Rupa Goswami is giving examples of that. Yeah? How wonderful is the personal feature of Lord Krishna. How his neck is just like a conch shell. His eyes are so beautiful, as though they themselves were encountering the beauty of a lotus flower. So then Rupa Goswami he then furthers this topic by speaking 64 qualities of Krishna. So this is the second wave. This is these qualities cause vibhava. And what's vibhava?
Attraction.
It stimulates affection for Krishna. So he mentions, he gives these 64 qualities. Now this should be familiar. Out of Krishna's 64 qualities, ordinary living beings like us can manifest the first 50 in minute, minuscule quantities. Yeah? Lord Shiva can partially manifest the first 55 qualities. Yeah? Narayan, no, I've got Brahmani, I'm not too sure I've got Brahmani. No, Shiva and Brahma, that's why. They can manifest the first 55 qualities. And Narayan, the first 60. Yeah. Anyone's familiar with, anyone's read through these qualities of Krishna in the Nectar of Devotion? You're familiar?
I did yesterday.
That's good. Now, only Krishna can possess any of these 64 qualities in full, to an infinite extent, unlimited. Yeah? In fullness, as deep as the oceans. That's Krishna. Yeah? So moreover, Krishna possesses four unique qualities not found anywhere else. I think we might be familiar with those. What are those?
I can only read these out there. It's like he performs wonderful varieties.
Pastimes, yeah, go on. Yeah, you read it, yeah.
He's surrounded by devotees, endowed with wonderful love of Godhead.
Yeah.
He can attract all living entities all over the universes by playing his flute.
Flute, yeah.
He has wonderful excellence of beauty.
Beauty, yeah. So that's known as. One is Leela Madhurya. You can remember; it helps you remember that. Leela Madhurya. He's unique, sweet pastimes. Yeah, not found in Narayan. So, for example, when the cowherd boys, they steal away Krishna's lunch and they cover his eyes, you know. They can't do that in Vaikuntha with Narayan. They can't steal away his lunch and jump on his back, and let alone the intimate, wonderful exchanges of love with the gopis, you know, in the dead of night. That's only exhibited by Krishna. So, Leela Madhurya, yes.
I was thinking, for a long time I didn't understand that Krishna's always in Vrindavan, but he's also in Dwarka. But then somebody said to me, you know, it's like his heart's always there, and I realised it's like I grew up in the countryside.
Yeah.
And so to me, I always remember nice pastimes when I was a child in the countryside, and then when you go there, you remember how nice it is.
Yeah,
And so there's always, you say there's like always a part of you there, yeah. But then you come to the city and you do your business. Yeah. And so, but it's like if a person's commuting for work, actually their heart is still at home in the countryside with their family.
Yeah, that's a nice description. Yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's like Krishna, he expands himself as Dwarka Krishna, but he himself never leaves Vrindavan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's in there in a bhava form. When his so-called leaves, he's still very much there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good example. Yeah. So, Leela Madhurya, unique pastimes. Prema Madhurya, unique sweet devotees, relishing, like we're describing now, you know, like we have to tell that. Little Leela, Krishna disguised as a boatman. Venu Madhurya, Krishna's sweet, attractive flute. And Rupa Madhurya, is beauty. Yeah. So Leela, Prema, Venu, and Rupa. Yeah. Leela Madhurya, Prema Madhurya, Venu Madhurya, and Rupa Madhurya. Yeah. So these exclusively possessed by Krishna and no one else. What?
Leela, Prema, Venu, and Madhurya.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Leela, Prema, Venu, and Rupa. Leela pastimes, beautiful, sweet, spontaneous love, prema, his flute playing, attractive flute, and his beautiful form, his sweet beauty. So this is the Southern Ocean, yeah? This is something directly speaking. We're directly speaking about Krishna now.
Yeah.
If you haven't noticed. So sometimes Krishna's parts of his body is compared to material objects, but it cannot give a complete. It's not a complete comparison. It like gives you an idea. Yeah, it gives you an idea. Like the most beautiful flower is the lotus flower. Yeah, so Krishna's eyes, compared, the most beautiful thing you can compare him to is a lotus. So his lotus eyes. So we're given a chance to understand by given a material comparison. Yeah, like Krishna's face is as beautiful as the moon. Description. You look at a full moon, it doesn't come anywhere near, but for our purposes, the full moon is beautiful. So his face is beautiful like the moon. His thighs are powerful. What's the powerful? Something think very powerful in fires.
A tree trunk. Elephant's trunk.
Yeah. Elephant. Just powerful, like the trunks of an elephant. I pulled up a picture of an elephant once. This is so when devotees see Krishna, it's so profound because Krishna is the source of all beauty. So the original source of everything, when devotees, when Krishna reveals himself, it strikes them like they're looking at a moon. It strikes them, they're looking powerful. His power is very powerful, very sweet, but extremely powerful. So his arms, for devotion, his arms are just like pillars.
I always find it funny that they describe Krishna's arms as coming down to his knees.
Yeah.
Because I can't imagine my arms coming down to my knees. It seems like they would be quite too long.
But that's a description of that. Lord Chaitanya also, there's a word for that. Where someone's, it's not actually, it doesn't look odd. It looks quite divine, you know. Yeah. Long arms, and you know, Lord Chaitanya had long arms down to his knees, you know. It's not at all odd looking, you know. So then his palms are expanded like, give me a clue.
Lotus,
yeah. His chest, big and broad, is like a doorway. His hips, it's interesting when it's like a den. No, it looked like den. Just big. And the middle of part of his body is like a terrace. Now, so that's beautiful bodily features. This is the first one that Rupa Goswami gives. Beautiful bodily features, you know. So he has auspicious characteristics. So Krishna's form has a luster in seven places. Can we say what they are? It's a red luster.
His cheeks.
Eyes.
His eyes, yes. Yeah. His eyes.
His hands.
Oh, you're just looking.
His lips.
His eyes, palms of his hand, the soles of his feet, his palate.
His palate.
The inside of his mouth, yeah, palate. His lips. His tongue, himself, and his nails. So a reddish luster in these seven places considered to be very auspicious. Sometimes the residents of Raj, they would see, or the person that would see Krishna's form, say this person must be an auspicious personality. His eyes are reddish, the palms of his hand, the soles of his feet, his palate, his lips, his tongue, his nails. You know. So three parts of his body are broad. So this is something which, as we kind of become more purified, we can meditate upon. If we can memorize these, you know. Memorize Krishna, reddish lustre in his different parts of Krishna's body, you know. Three parts are broad, his waist, forehead and chest. Yeah. Three parts of his body are short. His neck, thighs and genitals. Yeah. Modest. Three parts of his body are very deep. Without looking in the book, what can say what that is? Anybody?
His mouth.
His voice, intelligence and navel. There's a highness in five parts of his body. His nose, arms, ears, forehead and thighs. In five parts of his body, there is fineness. His skin, the hairs on his head and the other parts of his body, his teeth and his fingertips. Very fine. So the aggregate of all these bodily features is manifest only in the bodies of great personalities. So, auspicious characteristics. Now, I'm not going to personally go over all 64 qualities like this. No. I'm going to get you to speak about Krishna's qualities, but that come off this. So, pleasing. So we've had beautiful bodily features. That was the first one. The second one was called auspicious characteristics. And Krishna's very pleasing. So beautiful bodily features which attract the eyes is called pleasing. Or ruchira. It's pleasing. Beautiful bodily features, which automatically attracts the eyes. So Krishna possesses this attractive feature in his personal features. Yeah? So just some quote here. The Supreme Personality of Godhead in his pleasing dress. Just too loud. So try and picture the scene. He appeared at the scene of the sacrificial arena when King Yudhisthira was performing the Rajasuya sacrifice. So he appeared there. All the important personalities from different parts of the universe had been invited to the sacrificial arena. And all of them upon beholding Krishna there, considered that the Creator had ended all of his craftsmanship in the creation of the particular body of Krishna. Okay? So you picture the scene?
Yeah.
Krishna comes in and steals the show, you know. But they think the Creator, Krishna is the Creator. But they think this is what we are seeing here. This is the perfection of the Creator. This form we are seeing. Everyone was just stunned when he walked into the. You know. In that sense, you can get an idea where you know everyone's trying to be God, no? Everyone's thinking they're going to walk. They're going to stun everyone, and they're going to, you know. But Krishna, the same type of description is given when he walked into Mathura. You know, he walked in like he owned the place, which he does. Walked in, all the ladies went to the tops of the palaces to get a glance of him. So similar. You had a point?
Yeah, but it's funny because in that pastime, still, you know, they have a big fight about who actually should win, who should the registrar be dedicated to.
Yeah.
They still contested Krishna.
Yes, Shishupal was there. And he had some reservations about Krishna.
He took me away.
Yeah. But when he first walked in, like when Sukadev came on the scene, everyone stood up. His features were so auspicious. So when Krishna, from which all beauty comes from, when he walked into the scene, that was there. They fought. Beholding, they considered the Creator that ended all of his craftsmanship in the creation of the body of Krishna. So it's said that the transcendental body of Krishna resembles the lotus flower in 8 parts. Okay? Let's see if we can get these. So, the lotus flower, 8 parts of Krishna's body is compared to a lotus flower. Okay, anyone can say? Or have a
Eight
parts is compared to a lotus flower.
His navel.
Huh?
His navel.
Face. Yeah. His face. Let's put him up. His face is compared to a lotus flower. So again, just remember that lotus is the closest you can get for trying to appreciate Krishna's beauty. The Prabhupada said about the lotus is that just by looking at a lotus, one could be free from anxiety. Mm-hmm. It's so beautiful. Brahma's in New Vrindavan, there's a lotus lake there. Unfortunately, it wasn't the season for lotuses. But in the right time, if you go to the right time of the year,
where's that?
New Vrindavan, it's in the front of the palace, Prabhupada's palace.
Oh, New Vrindavan.
New Vrindavan.
Yeah, yeah.
West Virginia, USA.
Yeah.
There's just a stand. The first time I've seen lotuses, they come out of the water that much, you know?
But they have it at Newburgh's town as well, lotuses.
Yeah, I've never seen them.
Yeah, I have.
I've seen lilies there, but never lotuses. There's a difference between a lily and a lotus.
That little pond there?
Yeah, I think they're lilies. Lotus comes out of the water that much. Mm. They come out of the water that much. About 2 foot for sometimes like
so
that.
So these are lilies. I have.
Anyway, Krishna's face is compared to a lotus. Lotus eyes. Lotus hands, lotus navel, and his 2 lotus feet. Yeah? So 5 parts, under pleasing, 5 parts of his body is compared to a lotus. Yeah? The gopis and inhabitants of Vrindavan used to see the luster of lotus flowers everywhere and could hardly withdraw their eyes from such a vision. It reminded them of Krishna.
It's not so uncommon because, like we say in England, you know, she was an English rose.
Yeah.
It's not such a dissimilar description.
Yeah, yeah, it's good to describe certain beauty of a flower, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Krishna. So.
Is this like we've seen this lotus flower? Is this to help people like me to be synonymous when you look at Lotus flower, to think of Krishna.
Yeah,
lotus,
yeah, yeah. See lotus. Krishna's face is beautiful. Okay, to look, his eyes. His eyes is quite.
Yes, yes.
They're definitely like him. Yeah. His eyes are like lotus, like lotus, like a lotus petal.
Yes.
You know, it's like lotus petal. His eyes. And remember, his eyes are reddish as well.
Yes.
In the movie, and they're reddish with rasa.
Another thing, why are Krishna's hands on the inside always painted red?
Well, because Krishna's hands,
that's his luster,
as we just described. Different parts of his body are reddish: palms, his feet, his palate, his eyes. So that's why we paint reddish.
Like a child, you know, when they're happy and they've been playing and their body temperature has risen, it gives them a nice luster. They like they look flushed.
Yeah.
Or even you know, if someone gets shy, they're embarrassed. Their cheeks get red.
Yes.
So, effulgence. The luster of the host of jewels fixed on the chest of the Lord can defeat even the luster of the sun. And still, when compared with the bodily luster of the Lord, that crest of jewels appears to be only as bright as one of the stars in the sky. So the jewels themselves, they can defeat the luster of the sun. But when compared to the luster of Krishna's body, they're compared to be only as bright as one of the stars in the sky. So therefore, Krishna's luster is also the manifestation of Brahman effulgence. Yeah? Everything rests in the effulgence of Krishna's body, which is known as Brahman. Yeah?
You know, we see the stars very far away, right?
Yeah.
And we find them really bright. But can you imagine if you saw Krishna?
It's a different brightness. It's not a brightness which you go like that. It's because that brightness is... There's a quality of sweetness which makes it attractive.
Like the glittering sweet on a lake.
Yeah, but it's not like that. For some, the impersonalists, then they're blinded by the effulgence of Krishna. And they cannot see further. But for the devotees, that brightness is sweet. It's sweet in the So, therefore, the transcendental... Just continuing here. Therefore, the transcendental influence of Krishna is so great that it can defeat anyone. When Krishna was present in the sacrificial arena of his enemy, King Kamsa, the wrestlers present, so appreciating the softness of the Buddha of Krishna, were afraid and perturbed when they thought of engaging with him in battle. Okay. Okay, so we're not going to have time to go on all 64 qualities, but what I was going to do is pick the... Finally, perhaps more people would attend and give out all these cards. But we have the cards here, and all these cards is the 64 qualities of Krishna. Yeah? So I'm just going to remove the first ones we just discussed. We discussed this yet, beautiful bodily features, auspicious characteristics, very pleasing, ruchira, and effulgent. Okay? So now I'm gonna. Everyone's had to shuffle cards.
Yeah.
You know how to shuffle cards?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
I can do the
end. Okay, you can shuffle them up.
Okay.
I was envisioning for this part perhaps 10 or 15.
Yes.
And I was going to get everyone else to get into groups of two. And then hand these cards out and just speak as much as you can on these different qualities. But we'll do it amongst ourselves. So we have a next card play here.
Long time since I played cards now. They're too heavy.
get out of it.
John
Horsford
used to be a croupier.
Really?
Yeah, that would be.
Used to work in
a
gambling
casino. Yeah.
As a croupier. Who knew that in handy at some point?
Give that a slash. We can keep this in mind for other seminars if you want. So, let's go again. So, let's just hand them out. Let's just give two to everyone. And you can look at them. A minute or so, then you can share. Seconds to prepare. Okay, so Mava Bironi, is it? Like, how do you pronounce your name? Brian, excuse me. Okay, Brian. So you can, which quality do you have there first?
Gentle.
Gentle, okay, so tell us something about Krishna's being
that,
gentle.
He's, I guess that would be soft, but the way that he walks is very gentle on the floor, and his feet are so soft that the rocks they change their nature so that they become soft so they don't hurt his feet.
Yes.
Or would that be too much softness?
No, that's nice. That's nice.
But I like how he walks.
Yeah. Okay. Anyone else can add something to that? Krishna's gentle. Yeah, perhaps just it's the first time I'm doing this, so I'm just experimenting a bit. Let's see what is said here. Any person who neither becomes impudent nor exhibits puffed up nature is called gentle. So the example given of Krishna's gentle behaviour when he was again coming to the Rajasuya sacrifice arranged by Yudhisthira, Krishna's older cousin. Maharaj Yudhisthira knew that Krishna was the supreme personality of Godhead, and when he was attempting to get down from his chariot to receive Krishna, but before Yudhisthira could get down, Lord Krishna got down from his own chariot and immediately fell at the feet of the king. Even though Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, he never forgets to show social etiquette in his dealings. So, again, any person who neither becomes impudent nor exhibits puffed up nature is called gentle. So, the story that Krishna got off of his own chariot and bowed down to Maharaj Yudhisthira, as though he's the supreme personality of Godhead. So, Rupa Goswami gives that example of gentle. Yes.
The way that he treats Sudama when he comes to visit him, and he only has this small chipped rice,
yes.
And Krishna takes him and he takes his feet and he massages, he washes and massages his feet.
Yes. So it's similar. Krishna's supreme lord, this Brahmana comes and he serves this Brahmana. So Kunamayi, which one of your cards do you have?
Respectful.
So, what comes to mind if Krishna's being respectful?
Respecting elders, spiritual master, and anyone who teaches you.
But think of Krishna, if you were to give an example of Krishna directly as being respectful, what pastime can you think of that?
He was respectful to his own.
Yes, Sandipani Muni, very respectful. Yeah, let's see what's...
But even, like Bhishma and Drona, he gave everyone respect to his elders, didn't he?
And you got it exactly right. A person who shows adequate respect to a spiritual master, a brahmana, and an old person is said to be understood as being respectful. So Krishna has these qualities in infinite depth, like an ocean. Yeah? So just the first one we just described was gentle. But he's also, as being gentle, he's very respectful. When a superior person is assembled before Krishna, Krishna first of all respect to his spiritual master, then to his father, then to his elder brother Balaram. In this way, Lord Krishna, the lotus-eyed, was completely happy and pure at heart in all of his dealings. Yeah? So he's gentle and he's respectful. Yeah? He's respectful, someone who's respectful, it's an endearing quality. No? He endears you to them. I had it, it's a nice experience, me and Ashwin Gavarcha, when we did a long drive, we came over from Ireland, from Dublin to Holyhead, then we drove all the way through Wales, you know. We took a scenic route through the Snowdonian Mountains, and then through the, what's the mountains below, South Wales, forget the name, but anyway, we got to Wales, we stopped at Wales in a temple there, in the Prashad. Then we got in the car again and drove to Birmingham. So we was quite exhausted, we'd driving, you know. And one devotee couple, husband and wife, they were kind enough to put us up in their house, in their flat, you know. I hadn't met them before, so the husband came to me. He was so respectful, he was so... such a good host. We felt completely relaxed in his company, him and his wife. His wife couldn't do enough, It was embarrassing, they wanted to do so much, cook so much, and we said, no, don't worry, let's... But they was very, very respectful, you know, very respectful, and we felt... And I said to them, because we stayed, because we had a meeting with devotees in Birmingham, and then we stayed overnight, and I felt completely refreshed. Just being in that association, very respectful, you know, that experience, so respectful, yeah. So Bhana Radhika, which quality you have?
Compassionate.
Compassionate, okay, so.
Okay.
And tell us something about Krishna being compassionate, what comes to mind?
What comes to mind that he was very compassionate to all the demons that came to kill him, especially.
Yeah.
Especially, the one who came to feed him.
What's the name? The witch?
Bhutana.
Bhutana. Yes. Yeah.
And he showed compassion by sending her back to Godhead.
Yeah. Maharaj related that. Who related that recently in the class? Yeah, compassion. So she came to kill him. She smeared her breast with deadly poison. But Krishna took the good approach. So Krishna is very compassionate. He's very gentle, he's very respectful,
and
he's very
compassionate.
Let's see what. So, example given here. A person who is unable to bear another's distress, they can't bear it, it's called compassionate. Krishna's compassion for distressed persons was exhibited when he released all the kings imprisoned by Maghadendra. So this king had imprisoned, or this ruler had imprisoned thousands of kings, you know. I think he was going to offer them in sacrifice to Lord Shiva. Offer their heads. Also, while dying, Grandfather Bhishma prayed to Krishna and described him as a sun which eradicates darkness. The kings imprisoned by Maghadendra were put into dark cells. When Krishna appeared there, the darkness immediately disappeared, just as the sun had arisen. In other words, although Maghadendra was able to imprison so many kings, upon the appearance of Krishna, they were all released. Krishna released a kings out of his sincere compassion for them. So Krishna's compassion, I couldn't find a picture of that, but I found a picture of Bhishma. So Krishna's compassion was also exhibited when grandfather Bhishma was lying on the bed of arrows which had been shot through his body. While lying in this position, Bhishma was very anxious to see Krishna, and Krishna appeared there. Upon seeing the pitiful condition of Bhishma, Krishna began speaking with tears in his eyes. They're not false tears, Krishna was feeling, seeing Bhishma. Not only was he shedding tears, but he also forgot himself in compassion. Therefore, instead of offering obeisances to Krishna, it's some very, what's the compassionate, let's say, how do we approach Krishna? What's the best way to approach Krishna?
Humility.
Huh?
With humility.
Through who?
Radharani.
Yeah. So Prabhupada gives this example, he mentions about compassion. Therefore, instead of offering obeisances to Krishna directly, devotees offer obeisances to his compassionate nature. Actually, because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it is very difficult to approach him. But the devotees, taking advantage of his compassionate nature, which is represented by Radharani, always pray to Radharani for Krishna's compassion. So we pray to Radharani for Krishna's compassion. Perhaps I'll play this one.
When we say when we say Hari, meaning addressing the internal potency of Krishna first, could you say that's kind of like appealing to his compassionate nature also?
Yes, because that is Hari is Radharani, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's, yeah. So keep that in mind.
Yes.
Often we forget that. When we want Krishna, give me your grace, we should say, Radharani, I'm complaining to you about Krishna, I'm not getting any mercy from you. You're a soft-hearted counterpart. Please, you be merciful to me. Krishna's not looking at me. Please, you be merciful. Please, you put your word in. So compassion. Brian Matiji, and the next one you have there?
Number 12, highly intelligent.
Okay, highly intelligent. So, how is Krishna highly intelligent? Can you think about it for a couple of minutes?
So, like everything he does is very carefully thought out and constructed. So, Duryodhan comes to the kingdom of Yudhisthira, which is, designed by the architect of the gods,
yeah.
And he falls into the water, and he's very, dishonored, mm. And the queens all laugh at him, and Yudhisthira is trying to calm them down, and Krishna says, "No, let them laugh,"
Yeah.
And because Duryodhan is so angry with this, and he's been shamed, then he has a grudge against the Pandavas, and so then this starts the war between the Pandavas and the Kauravas. But, when I first read that, I was thinking, wow, this whole thing is completely arranged by Krishna and his intellect, but we're so limited, we think, oh, war is bad, but it's to lighten the burden of Kshatriya demon kings. So it's Krishna's intelligent planning.
That's the nice thing to say, Krishna's very intelligent. He's so foreseeing. That at first he just let the laughing continue. Because Duryodhan would be raging for revenge, Help to stir things up,
Dishonor is worse than death for the Kshatriya.
So let's. Highly learned, yeah, that was that one?
Highly intelligent.
Highly intelligent, okay, let's.
Like I see that as like a chess game, It's like the kings and everything. It's all very intelligent. Oh yeah, and that example.
So, someone is called intelligent if they have sharp memory and fine discretion. Try and build up these qualities of Krishna. If you can hold within your heart and memory, help. What have we described so far?
Well,
compassion, beautiful bodily features, compassionate, respectful,
gentle.
So now this, we're adding more. Yeah. So he's also highly intelligent. So Krishna's also got, someone has sharp memory and fine discretion. They consider to be intelligent. As far as Krishna's memory is concerned, why are these pictures there? Let me just check. Oh, that's there. As far as Krishna's memory is concerned, it said when he was studying in the school of Sandipani Muni in Avantapura, he showed sharp memory. Isn't it? Just by hearing something once, then he remembered it. Mm. Yeah? Became perfect in any subject. Krishna's fine discretion was exhibited when he was fighting with the untouchable king who attacked the city of Mathura. That's just the person's name. According to Vedic rites, those who are untouchable are not to be touched by the Kshatriya kings. Kalavayana. Yeah. Even for killing, they're so untouchable, we just don't go anywhere near them. Yeah? Therefore, when the untouchable king seized the city of Mathura, Krishna did not think it wise to kill him directly with his own hand. Still, the king had to be killed. So we know the story, isn't it? Krishna fled. He was known as Rancho, where he left the battlefield, and this Kalavihana chasing Krishna. Krishna ran into a cave where Muchukunda was sleeping, having received a benediction from Kartikeya, the demigods, because he was fighting on their behalf. Yeah? And he didn't want anyone to wake him up. Anyone who did wake him up would be burnt to ashes. So then Krishna ran into the cave, and he stood hiding to one side. Kalavyana running, saw Muchukunda, thought it was Krishna, and booted him. Muchukunda woke up and burned him to ashes, just left his shoes smoking. Burned him. And so Krishna, that's an example given of Krishna being highly intelligent, how to dispose of this untouchable king. I don't want to even kill him with my own hands, you know? So highly intelligent. Yeah. Yes, Kurumai, you have your second one?
All honourable.
Okay. You can say something about that, Krishna's all honourable.
I thought Krishna and Arjuna, you know, when he was saying you can either have my Sena or myself to fight, and then Arjuna actually picked him. And then on the battlefield, when Krishna came off the chariot to kill Bhishma, Arjuna stopped him, and Krishna actually listened to him. Is that possible?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Krishna listened to?
Arjuna, stop fighting, you know, don't fight him, honor your word,
that
you are not going to fight.
Yeah.
And he listened to him.
Yeah, that's a wonderful pastime that. It was, it's like exchange of love on the battlefield, yeah?
Yes.
Grandfather Bhishma has come to then forcing Krishna to break his word.
Yeah.
But then Arjuna gave chase to Krishna, and he was forced to obey to Arjuna's "Don't break your word." And let's see what's here. All honourable.
Yes.
Oh, this is
This is when he asked him to show his two
hands.
Yeah, the picture is not as... the picture, I couldn't find a picture for this, so I just put this one up. But... so an example given here is... a person who is chief among all important persons is called all honourable. An example is given. So when Krishna was living at Dwarka, demigods like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, Indra, they would come to see him. So the doorkeeper had to manage the guests coming in. So eventually all these demigods. So on the busy day, he said, "My dear Lord Brahma, my dear Lord Shiva, please sit down on the bench and wait." This is Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, you know. "My dear Indra, please desist from reading your prayers. It's creating a big disturbance. Please wait silently. My dear Varuna, please go away. There's no time for you today. And my dear demigods, please do not waste your time uselessly. Krishna is very busy. He cannot see you." So the doorkeeper's letting Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva sit there silently, telling Indra to keep quiet, making too much noise, telling Varuna to come back another day, telling the demigods not to even bother, Krishna's too busy. But that's Krishna, he's quite an important person, no? He's all honourable. Yeah. So, Savani Radhika?
I don't know what to say, all opulent.
Okay, so... yes. Similar to what we just described.
It says it all in that one word, all opulent.
Yeah, but you need to expand it for us a bit more, just kind of... what?
Strength, wealth, fame, beauty, knowledge.
Yeah, let's say something about how is Krishna all... what did you have there? All honourable.
It just is.
Which one do you have again? It's
all opulent, 48.
But why is he? Just give us a why is he? He must be, why is he opulent?
Because he's got everything. He's the source of everything.
Yes, that's it. Source of everything. He's got everything. Yes?
He's got 16,108 wives and he perfectly maintains them and
then
effortlessly.
Yeah. None of them are complaining.
Yeah. Well, I mean, most people can't maintain one household, let alone 16,000.
Think of the palaces.
Each one had a palace.
Yeah, all opulent. How much? How much opulence in those palaces?
Yeah.
16,000. Yeah.
Just the descriptions of the palaces themselves. Yeah. Like all the walls were inlaid with jewels. And everything was silk and lace.
Here's the description here. Sorry, it's okay. Let's. "My dear Lord, what can I say about the opulence of your Vrindavan? Simply the ornaments on the legs of the damsels of Vrindavan are more than Chintamani, and their dresses are as good as the heavenly Parijata flowers, and the cows exactly resemble the Sarabi cows in a transcendental abode. Therefore, your opulence is just like an ocean that no one can measure." So Krishna's opulence is the six: strength, wealth, fame, beauty, knowledge and renunciation. So when Krishna was in Dwarka, his family consisted of 560 million members. His family, just in Dwarka. Yeah? And all of these family members were obviously all completely devoted and obedient and faithful to Krishna. So there was 900,000 palatial buildings to house all the people. 900,000. And everyone in them respected Krishna as most worshipable. Devotees were astonished to see the opulence of Krishna. Yeah. And that verse we just read was from Bilba Mangala Thakur, speaks this one, yeah? So Krishna is all opulent. So I think you've all done two there, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah? What time are we going to stop? 12:30, isn't it?
Yeah, we could just stop for the...
12:30 we can stop for an hour.
For the Gayatri, then we can have a lunch break at 1:30,
So okay, you okay for lunch, 12:30 to 1:30 in the morning?
Yeah.
Because he wasn't here when we discussed it.
Anyway,
we'll stop at 12:30, is that it? So, the idea, what we're doing here, if you notice, is the idea is you're thinking about Krishna's pastimes. So I'll end up handing some more cards out and just to use our intended mind to think about Krishna. You know? That's what Krishna consciousness is about. It's being conscious of Krishna. You never think about Krishna. It's good to know some of the qualities of Krishna, his personality. And it means you can meditate. It helps you to meditate upon Krishna, you know? So,
can you just say the numbers that you have the cards? What were the numbers?
Yeah. The numbers on the cards?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can just say. Perhaps the numbers on your cards?
48.
Which were opulent, right?
33 and 49. Which one was 33? 32 is compassionate. 32 is compassionate. Yeah. 48 all opulent. Yeah. And 49 all honourable. The idea, what I was, if there was like, the idea I wanted to create here was also, say if there's like 15 people here, and everyone's speaking Krishna Katha.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the idea. Everyone's speaking directly about Krishna. Yeah. There's such a auspicious atmosphere. Even just doing this work, just
auspicious.
So we can hand out some more cards, okay? Number two each week. We go to our past.
Yeah.
Churning the qualities of Krishna.
Yeah. So churning the nectar of Krishna.
Churning the nectar of Krishna. I'm just going to randomly put out two. I'm not looking. So you can.
You know, I was thinking just even understanding some of the opulences of Krishna gives us a better understanding of the text. Like Jayantathapu gave that class the other day when he said, you know, the common question of, oh, I don't agree with the phrase, women are less intelligent. But when you read chapter 10 of the Bhagavad Gita, and Krishna says, of women, I can find speech, memory, intelligence.
Yes.
Yeah.
So actually, it's you know, that one comment taken out of context is completely neither here nor there.
So in relationship to what we're discussing now?
Yeah, I would, just because I was thinking, like the last card that I got was highly intelligent.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm just thinking about, you know, we're conditioned to be attached to a word, even though that word has no specific meaning until it's in context.
Yeah, yeah.
And then according to our understanding, we project onto that word.
Yeah.
But that word intelligent can be, in this context, we're discussing Krishna's opulence.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Krishna says, of women, intelligence is an opulence, and it comes from him anyway.
And it's a feminine quality.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. Yes. Okay, who wants to go first? You can go first.
Okay, number 35, liberal.
Okay, well, you can begin and I'll find it up here. Liberal, so remember to build, if you can, some persons may have one quality in a small degree in the material world, yeah? But they haven't got all these qualities. So Krishna's got all these qualities to an infinite degree. So again, you have there, liberal. Okay, so what would you say Krishna's liberal? Okay, I've got it here.
I mean, liberal, what I understood from the scriptures, means like broad-minded. Like it's described that Srimati Radharani is very liberal. And when I read it up, it means that she's broad, like she's open-minded, she's willing to accept, you know, people as they are and things as they are.
That's nice. That's good, isn't it? Liberal. Yeah. In other words, when Radharani accepted the, isn't it? She's very liberal in giving compassion to a jackal. Mm. You know the story? A jackal was being attacked by some young boys, and they had run into a rabbit hole for protection. And the young boys then started a fire in front of this hole. And this jackal was crying. And Radharani heard it. He said, "No one, who is crying in Vrindavan?" So she went, and the boys ran, and she took the jackal and she gave it shelter. Became, you know, achieved. So that's compared sometimes to the spiritual master, you know. He comes to, he's very liquid. So let's see what.
Amazing.
So Krishna is liberal. There's a picture here. Let's see. Any person who is by his natural behavior is very mild. It's called liberal. So they're very mild, they're very liberal. And a statement by Uddhava, after the Shamantakajal plundered, confirms that Krishna is so kind and favorable that if a servitor is accused, even of great offenses, Krishna does not take it into consideration. He simply considers the service that is rendered by his devotees. Yeah? So very liberal. Reminds us of the verse from Bhagavad Gita, Apichet Sugaracharo, Bhajate Manam Nibak, Sato Eva Samantavya, Samyak Vyashato Isha. That even if one commits the most abominable activities, he is engaged in devotional service, he's considered to be saintly. Because he's properly situated in his determination. So Krishna's very liberal. Okay. So, Kurumayi, you have.
Highly learned.
Highly learned.
Are you learned?
11. 11. Oh, 11. Good, good, good. Okay. Okay, there's. Okay, what if Krishna's highly learned? How is he highly learned? That the example given, we have already mentioned this morning. But can think otherwise, other than that.
Very educated,
he imparted all the
knowledge to Brahma. Yeah. Give it here. You know, like in the beginning, everyone was highly learned in that time. You know, the monos, they knew what they were doing. Yeah. You know, like they were just empowered by him. I don't know.
Yeah, well. Well, all our knowledge comes from Krishna. Yeah? All learning comes from Krishna. Yeah?
And we're all learned.
Yeah. Highly learned. Krishna, yeah. Let's see what. Now, this is your sample, yeah? We mentioned this already, yeah? So, when a person is highly educated and acts strictly on moral principles, so highly educated, acts strictly on moral principles, he is called highly learned. A person conversant in different departments of knowledge is called educated, and because he acts on moral principles, he is called morally stout. Together, these two factors constitute learning. Okay, so examples given is someone who's educated and acts on moral principles. They're called learned. So Krishna's receiving education from Sandipani Muni is described by Narada Muni as follows. In the beginning, Lord Brahma and others. Okay, let's put this. I'm just experimenting.
It's nice. It's really nice.
I think the poem is a bit loud there. In the beginning, this is Narada Muni. Lord Brahma and others are like clouds of evaporated water from the great ocean of Krishna. In other words, Brahma first received a Vedic education from Krishna, as the clouds receive water from the ocean. That Vedic educational instruction, which was spoken by Brahma to the world, was then reposed upon the mountain of Sandipani Muni. Sandipani Muni's instructions to Krishna are like the reservoir of water on the mountain, which flows as a river, and goes again to mix with the source, the ocean of Krishna. Okay. So Prabhupada mentioned, to be more clear, Krishna cannot be instructed by anyone. just as the ocean does not receive water from any source but itself. It only appears like the rivers are pouring water into the ocean. So it's clear that Brahma receives his education from Krishna, and from Brahma, via the civil succession, this instruction was distributed to Sandipani Muni, who again offered it back into the original, which is Krishna, river. Just like when you go to the Ganges, we offer it back into the Ganges. So similar, Sandipani Muni is instructing, but that instruction is coming from Brahma, which is given by Krishna, and he's giving it back to Krishna, just like we're offering the Ganges.
Is that why we do that? That we're saying, like, this comes from you, I offer you back to yourself?
Yes, yes, this is for your worship, from your back. Let's see. There's more here, but we won't. Yeah. Okay. Savani or what do you have?
It's 51 and it's changeless.
Changeless? Okay, that one.
Krishna is not affected by kala, time.
Yeah.
So he's not bound by the, like the humans, to give up his body and change to another, take shelter of another body.
Yeah, that's perfectly, I'm sure that's the example given. Yeah, he's changeless. Very nice. Yeah, Krishna is changed. Nava Yovanam.
Yeah?
I'm just trying to fish it out from here.
Yeah.
I think I missed the all famous part.
Changeless.
Changeless. It doesn't affect.
What was the number?
31.
I don't know why I put some milk on it here, changeless. I think it comes later. Oh, yeah, you got it exactly. The example. Yeah, there you go. Cycle of birth and death, yeah. Krishna doesn't change his constitutional position, not even when he appears in this material world. And the example is given. We change our bodies, yeah, Krishna. And it goes on to expand on that. So Krishna has changed us. Imagine that Krishna's always been there, Krishna always will be there. And same Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Natam Eva Chitu Nasam, Natam Nema Janadipa, Nichevana Bhavishyama, Savova Eva Dhabaru. There was a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor his kings, nor the future shall any of us cease to be. Yeah? So Krishna is changeless. Yes, very good, thank you. Bharani Mashi, so your next one is?
So the next one is 50, the Supreme Controller.
Okay, so yeah, that was a Supreme Controller. Yeah, so tell us.
The pastime that comes to my mind that I always like is how Krishna proves that he's the Supreme Controller, because he expands himself as all the cowherd boys when Lord Brahma takes them away, because Lord Brahma wants to say, I'm the Supreme Controller, I can do everything, I'm the Creator, and Krishna. Yes. Krishna is so amazing that he doesn't even say, no, you're not. He actually just lets Brahma get on with it, and he just expands himself and in turn increases the love of the cows and their calves and all the cowherd boys and their families simultaneously. So it's evidential that Krishna is the Supreme Controller.
Very nice, Supreme Controller. Very good. Very good. Nice example. So let's see what it says here. Here's, we have Kaliya Krishna here. Let's see, there's a few things here. Okay. There are two kinds of controllers. or lords. One who is independent is called controller, and one whose orders cannot be neglected by anyone is called controller. Regarding Krishna's complete independence and lordship, Srimad Bhagavatam says that although Kaliya was a great offender, Krishna still favoured him by marking his head with his lotus feet. Whereas Lord Brahma, although having prayed to Krishna with so many wonderful verses, still could not attract him. This contradictory treatment by Krishna is just befitting his position, because in all Vedic literature he is described as being completely independent. There's a word in the Bhagavatam called Surat, the first verse of the first canto, which is independent. Okay, let's read this verse. One devotee prays, "My dear Krishna, when you order Brahma, now you may create the universe, and when you order Lord Shiva, now you dissolve this material manifestation."
To volume, Sitarama.
"You are in this way creating and dissolving material creation yourself, simply by your orders and by your partial representation of Vishnu. You are maintaining the universes. In this way, O Krishna, enemy of Kamsa, there are so many Brahmins and Shivas who are simply carrying out your orders." So Krishna is the supreme controller. Okay, Kunamai,
what do you have? All cognizant.
All cognizant. Okay, I've got this one. Yeah, it's interesting. I'll put this picture up, see if you can link it with this picture. You know this pastime? What's going on? There's a pot.
Isn't this?
They're in a simple hut. Krishna's.
Oh, is this Sudama and his wife?
No.
No. She's making an offense because she cooked a feast, and she says who is it? I can't remember who it was, but he's at the feast. He's a Brahmin, and he eats. He mixes everything up, and he eats it all in one. And she thinks that he's very uneducated.
No. Wrong pastime.
This is her.
What am I?
Eaten all the pandavas and everybody. Yeah. Everyone has eaten,
and there was nothing.
And there was nothing. There was one grain left. And she hadn't washed out the pot. But in the meantime, Durvasamuni comes, and he says he's going to go and have a bath and come back and have a meal. And there was once that pot, everything's eaten. They can't reproduce anything.
Oh, yeah.
And then,
oh, doesn't Krishna?
It's like the mental thing. Yeah. Krishna.
Yeah.
Krishna knew it, so yeah. Krishna came, and she was very much stressed out. There's nothing left in the pot, which there's nothing left to cook. And if they don't cook, if the Vasa is not pleased, they can get cursed by the Vasa. So Krishna, being all cognizant, he appeared on the scene. Give me that pot. And he ate that grape. And then the Vasamuni and all the disciples, they felt. They felt bloated and they felt embarrassed that if we go, then we won't be able to eat. So better we just leave. So that's the example given, Krishna, all cognizant.
This was that pastime was given as an example of how people who are disciples of like people like Jayaprathak Maharaj or Radhana Swami Maharaj, how they don't feel that they're not having a relationship with him, because they might not be able to have such a personal relationship with emails and things, but
when he feels something, simultaneously his disciples can get that same feeling.
Yeah, the same,
in the same way.
Prabhupada disciples will experience that.
Yes.
Yeah. So you could say it's interesting.
The other one is Duryodhan, when he goes to see his mother, you know, at the end of the fight, he goes to see his mother, and, you know, Krishna knew that he was going to go, so he laughed at him, and he had to wear shorts.
Yeah.
So Bhim could hit him on the legs.
Yeah, yeah, the thighs.
And destroy him.
Yeah. So Krishna's all cognizant. So that example, that pastime is given.
Yeah, that's really good.
All cognizant. Krishna knows what's going on.
That pastime is
really
good.
Yeah.
That is sweet.
Yeah. So, Subhanu, Radhika.
Okay. Subhanu, Radhika, Shai. Subhanu.
Haha, you got that one. This one's an interesting one.
I
Krishna.
I just read it. I've just read it. Somebody who exhibits humility and bashfulness is called shy.
And you've got it there, you're reading?
And that's because I'm cheating, it's a very interesting writing.
No problem.
And the example given is when Krishna lives in Govardhan.
There you go.
There.
Krishna, yeah.
And when he his glance goes to the gopis, breast, and then Balaram sees that, and then he's there too. That's, like I said, I'm cheating for here. Yeah.
Krishna, he begins to shake when he's looking at the gopis.
Yes, yes. And they all get scared, and they all pray to Krishna to help. And then
Balaram sees Krishna looking, and then Krishna sees Balaram seeing him. He becomes shy. That's good, shy. So Krishna also has the interesting volume of shyness.
Shy.
Okay, we have perhaps time for a couple more. Bharati Machaji? Your second one?
Yeah. Those are the only two that I have.
Oh, you have two? Everyone's done two?
Yeah.
You've done two. Okay.
Ready? So that was 56.
Okay, so we'll stop there then. We don't have time to go through them all.
No, but
unfortunately.
Yeah, but this is good.
It was a really nice exercise.
It's a nice exercise, isn't it? It's very nice just to directly hear about Krishna's pastimes and recall them, you know.
And it's interactive, it gets you doing, otherwise it's just talking.
So, I just go here, let's just go quickly. I'm just going to quickly, just before lunch, we'll just go over these. So Krishna is strong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can quickly look there, Krishna defeating demon, the boar demon, and lifting Govardhan Hill. Slide, one second ago. Krishna's ever youthful, ever yovanam. He's a wonderful linguist, he can speak the language of the cows, the monkeys, he can speak Sanskrit of the demigods, he can speak, you know, speak to everyone. He's truthful. When he went to Jarasandha, he was a Kshatriya. He disguised himself as Brahmana. And Jarasandha said, "So what are you doing?" So then Krishna told the truth. Yeah, actually, I'm Krishna. Krishna's truthful. Krishna's fluent. This is a picture describing when Krishna is, in a very fluid way, speaking very nicely to convince Nanda Maharaj not to worship Govardhan Hill. He spoke such fluent, beautiful words that mesmerized everyone, you know. Highly learned, we discussed that one. Sandi Moni Moni. Pleasing talker, is a nice way he speaks. He says to Kaliya, "Please don't be angry at me. I did this for your benefit." You know, so you did cease your bad activities. Highly intelligent, we discussed that one. Genius, interesting. Genius, if I remember, let's just have a quick look. Some genius. Yeah, genius when he can refute. Yeah, this is. I read this one.
What number is that?
This is number. Oh, I don't know actually. Okay. Let's talk. So, a genius can refute any opposing element with new arguments. So, in this connection, there's a statement from the Padyavali. Yeah? So, here. One morning, when Krishna came to Radha, Radha asked him, "My dear Keshava, where is your vasa at present?" The Sanskrit word vasa has three meanings. One meaning is residence, one meaning is fragrance, and another meaning is dress. Actually, Radharani inquired from Krishna, "Where is your dress?" But Krishna took the meaning as residence, and he replied to Radharani, "My dear captivated one, at the present moment, my residence is in your beautiful eyes." To this, Radharani replied, "My dear cunning boy, I did not ask about your residence, I inquired about your dress." Krishna then took the meaning of vasa as fragrance and said, "My dear fortunate one, I have just assumed this fragrance in order to be associated with your body." Radharani again inquired from Krishna, "Where did you pass the night?" The exact Sanskrit word used in this connection was yamina yamushita. Yaminya means at night and usita means pass. Krishna divided the word yaminushita into two separate words, namely yamina and musita. By dividing this word into two, it came out to mean that he was kidnapped by yamini or night. Krishna therefore replied to Radharani, "My dear Radharani, it is possible that night, is it possible that night can kidnap me?" In this way, he was answering all the questions of Radharani so cunningly that he gladdened the dearest of the gopis. Radharani. Okay, so let's just go through these. So artistic, he's the best dresser. He's artistically dressed and he's very clever. He composed nice songs. He's fighting, he's sitting with different kinds of living entities, different ways. He's very grateful. Example given there, he was grateful to Draupadi and the Shamdaka, very expert, very determined, expert judge of time and circumstance, beautiful full moon, beautiful, the most elevated persons in the world. Now it's time for rasa dance. Yeah. Expert. Seer by authority of scriptures, Krishna himself always quotes from scripture. Learned sages say, he mentioned Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's pure, self-controlled, steadfast, forbearing, forgiving, grave, self-satisfied, possesses equilibrium, magnanimous, religious, heroic, compassionate, respectful, gentle, liberal, shy, protects surrendered souls, happy, well-wisher of devotees, controlled by love, all auspicious, most powerful, all famous, popular, partial to devotees, very attractive to all women, all worshipful, all opulent, all honourable, supreme controller, changeless, all cognizant, ever fresh, Satchidananda, possessing all mystic perfections, inconceivable potencies, his body generates innumerable universes, is a source of all incarnations, gives salvation to the enemies he kills, attract of liberated souls, and the four main ones, or the four ones that no one else has, Lila Madhuya, sweet pastimes, we spoke about these already a little bit, Prema Madhuya, sweet
that's
that.
That's the one.
Whoever it's that exact pastime, I'm not sure, but it might well be, but there's a boat pastime, Vena Madhuya and the Rupa Madhuya. Beautiful. Okay, we'll stop there. We don't have time to churn the ocean of all these pastimes. We only did a few. So we get back together at just gone 1:30. Is that okay?
Yeah.
And then we continue. Hare Krishna. Thank you.